Narayanam namaskritya Naram chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jayamudirayet Nashta prayeshva badresho Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati uttama sloke Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Today is the day of the Canto 10th, chapter 6, and texts number 35 and 36. We are going, of course, to read only the number 35.
We do 34?
Huh? Oh, thanks. Should I do the 35? Putana Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudira Asana Jigamsaya Api Haraye Stanam Datva Apa Satgatim Putana Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudirasana Jigamsaya Piharaye Stanam Dattva Pasatgatim Putana Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudirasana Jigamsaya Piharaye Stanam Dattva Pasatgatim Putana Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudirasana Jigamsaya Piharaye Stanam Dattva Pasakatim Putana Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudirasana Tanam Lokabalagni Rakshasi Rudirasana Jigamsaya Piharaye Putana, the professional Rakshasi. It's a professional Rakshasi. She's really together. This is the first time that I read such an expression. Lokabalagni, who used to kill human children. Rakshasi, the she demon. Rudira Ashana, simply hankering for blood. Jigamsaya, with the desire to kill Krishna. Being envious of Krishna and having been instructed by Kamsa. Api, still. Haraye, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Stanam, her breast. Datva, after offering. Apa, obtained. Satgatim, the most elevated position of spiritual existence. I'm going to read myself the next verse. So, because these two verses, 35 and 36, are united. Kim puna shradaya bhaktya krishnaya paramatmane yachan priyatatma yachan priyatamam kim nu raktastan mataro yata. Translation of the two verses. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who had natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers, and who offered him their breasts to suck, or offered something very dear as a mother offers something to a child? Please repeat. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who had natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers, and who offered him their breast to suck, or offered something very dear as a mother offers something to a child? The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Putana had no affection for Krishna. Rather, she was envious and wanted to kill him. Nonetheless, because, with or without knowledge, she offered her breast, she attained the highest achievement in life. But the offerings of devotees attracted to Krishna in parental love are always sincere. A mother likes to offer something to her child with affection and love. There is no question of envy. So here we can make a comparative study. If Putana could attain such an exalted position in spiritual life by neglectfully, enviously making an offering to Krishna, what is to be said of Mother Yashoda and the other gopis who serve Krishna with such great affection and love, offering everything for Krishna's satisfaction? The gopis automatically achieve the highest perfection. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended the affection of the gopis, either in maternal affection or in conjugal love, as the highest perfection in life. Ramya kachid upasana prajavadu vargena yakalpita. Putana lokabala agni rakshasi rudirashana jigamsayapi haraye stanam datvapi datvapa sadgatim kim punashradaya bhaktya krishna ya paramatmane Yachan priya tamam kimnu raktas tanmataro yata. Putana was always anchoring for the blood of human children, and with a desire she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who had natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers, and who offered him their breasts to suck, or offered something very dear, as a mother offers something to a child? Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavancha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam. Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha. E Krishna Karuna Sindo, Dinabando Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavanishvari, Vrishabhano Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasa Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By this verse you can see the nature of devotional service and also the particular kind nature of the person who is the natural and original object devotion, which is Shri Krishna. Shri Krishna is the one who is at the center of everyone's devotion. So he receives the devotion of everyone. And because he is pure and perfect, there's no envy for everyone, for anyone, then what happens is that he appreciates any service. Doesn't matter how this service is done. Of course, there are differences between service. It's not that the service, unconscious service of Putana who offered their breast to Krishna, and the service, the pure loving service performed by pure devotees are the same. Still, Krishna, being non-envious, he appreciates any service, even when the service is apparent. Apparent means that the person did not want to serve Krishna at that time. That was not her, in the case of Putana, or sometimes in the case of normal people coming to the temple just because they received an invitation. They came here and they look at the deities, and so it's not that they have the intention of offering service. Still, Krishna, being so pure and kind, and because of being satisfied in himself and not needing anything from anyone, then he appreciates any service at a certain extent. Not, as I said, not appreciating the service in the same way of everyone, but still there is some kind of appreciation. Putana offered her breast to Krishna because she wanted to kill him, not because she wanted to serve him. Still, Krishna thought, oh, look at her. She's offering. She's giving me something. So the little part, and actually Putana had in some type of affection for Krishna for 1 second, for 1 split second. She said, oh, such a beautiful child, you know. And that moment, the motherly nature of Putana came out. And Krishna, being present in everyone's heart, saw that the desire or the professional Rakshasi, and then she was promoted, she was saved. Just a little devotion, even contaminated. See how Krishna is gentle. Still, gentleness doesn't mean to be loose. There is a difference between being gentle and being loose. Because if you are loose, then everyone says, oh, doesn't matter, if I become a devotee, I can go to the temple and, you know, insult the devotees, but because I went to the temple, Krishna will deliver me. That is not the case. And because of that, Krishna gives a rule. There might be just some exception. In the case of Putana, there was an exception. But the rule is that, Bhatya, that you had to do things for me with love and devotion. Otherwise, I will not accept your service. Which means you can give me anything, even something very small. I don't need big Rajasuya sacrifices. I don't need Ashwamedha Yagyas. I don't need expensive worship. You can give me just a little water or some fruit, but please do it with devotion, with love, and that I will appreciate. But then at the same time, Krishna thinks, I'm asking my devotees, I'm asking people devotion. But what about if they don't have devotion? Then they will not be able to serve me. They will not be able to advance in spiritual life, because I'm saying that, yes, I accept anything, but you had to give me devotion. So what happens if there is no devotion, or if there is just a little devotion? Then Krishna thinks, I should appear in the world in a particular form, in a very merciful form, in such a way people can worship me, can serve me, even if they don't have devotion. And that form is the Guru Vigraha, is the form of the spiritual master, is the form which is Lord Balaram in origin and Lord Nityananda in the particular rasa, Lord Chaitanya rasa. So he, the spiritual master, is the one who comes in the world and say, okay, you just serve Krishna. Krishna says with devotion. I don't even say that. You just serve Krishna. And I will accept this devotion, and I will give it to Krishna. Because I have devotion, I will give it to Krishna in devotion. You serve me. I am your representative. Serve me. That's why the worship of the guru is more important than the worship of Krishna himself, because the guru is someone who does not require a very elevated form of worship. And just like the guru being personally present would require the disciple, you do this. But then the disciple could say, well, Guru Maharaj, I cannot do this. It's something too difficult. I cannot do it. Then the guru say, okay, you cannot do it. You do that, this other thing, you know. And this is the particular importance of having a physical guru present, someone who is bodily, physically present in the life of the spiritual master, in the life of the disciple. And so this is spiritual life. Spiritual life is service to Krishna, but service does not mean to serve in the sense that we are accustomed to think in material life. It is something different. Just like the service you do for your son It's not like the service that you would do for someone who orders you, who enslaves you. You know, like, do this job, you know, otherwise I will do something against you. And you do it out of fear or out of necessity, just like the job of the people. They do job, and it's not that they like the job. They like only the money they get from the job. But when you do something for your son, for your wife, for your husband, for your mother, for your brother, that is service. But it's made out of love. You do it because you like this person. You want to do something to please him. So this is devotional service. Devotional service means I do something for Krishna because I like Krishna, because I know that Krishna will be satisfied with this. So imagine what a wonderful life is, a life where we don't have to do something because we must, but because we want. Imagine a life, a world, a society, where everyone is not forced to do anything. Everyone comes from the heart. And the other people will reciprocate always from the heart. This is the best, the heart, the sentiments, is the best part of the human being. So a society where everyone serves the others out of love, out of appreciation, this is a perfect society. This is a place where everyone would like to live. There is a very nice story about love and devotion and deities and everything. And I like this story particularly. There was one devotee during Lord Chaitanya's time. Actually took birth. He was a small boy. He was maybe 7 or 8 years old when Lord Chaitanya left the body. And he lived in Jagannath Puri. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time was living in Puri. So this boy would, his father's name was Morari Pandit, and he would come every day to do some menial service for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this boy was so well-mannered, and he was so educated. And Lord Chaitanya was always pleased with this boy, and he used to play with him. And he called him, his name was Makaradvaj. And he, so Gopal, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him Gopal out of affection. You know, Gopal is a small boy in Vrindavan. So when you have a child, it's naturally one of the names you want to call him. He says Gopal. Gopal will come to serve Lord Chaitanya every day. And at that time, everyone would forget about Makaradvaj's name and would call him Gopal, Gopal. One day Gopal was there, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to answer to the nature's call. So then he saw Lord Chaitanya with a tongue between his teeth, like this. And Gopal asked, why are you keeping your tongue between your teeth? And you know the story? Who knows the story? I mean, everyone should know. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya answered, well, I need to go to the bathroom. I need to. And my tongue cannot stop reciting the holy names. So since it's not respectful to chant while I am passing, stool or urine, whatever it is. So the only way I can stop my tongue from chanting is just to stop it like this, to close it between the teeth. And Gopal was a small boy, and he said, but my lord, let's say that death, whatever you do, everyone will follow because you are the leader among people. So your example is very important. So now you are giving the example of not chanting the holy names. So what about if a person, you may leave your body any time, and of course you go to Krishna. But what about me or anyone else? What about if death comes in that precise moment when you are not chanting the holy names? So Gopal, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, you are distracting me. You are my guru. So at that time, he said, okay, then your name should be Gopala Guru, Gopal Guru. Gopal Guru is one very important devotee in our history. And he was a disciple of Vakreshwar Pandit. When he grew up, he took initiation from Vakreshwar Pandit. And he ended up in Gambira. Gambira is the temple opposite to Lord Jagannath temple. Whoever has been in Jagannath Puri knows that there is the main Lord Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra temple. Then there is a big street going for maybe a couple of miles, I don't know. I cannot say how long. And then at the end there is another temple. In this temple, unfortunately, Westerners are not allowed in Gambira either. So there is this nice temple. And the king of Puri had found this deity during a military campaign, and he installed this deity of Radhakanta, is a deity of Krishna, in this temple. And he engaged the father of Kashimishra for worship, and then when Kashimishra's father became too old, he left the worship of the deities to the deity to his son, Kashimishra. Then Kashimishra handed over the worship of this very beautiful deity to Vakreshwar Pandit. And Vakreshwar Pandit, before leaving the body, entrusted the charge of the worship to his dear disciple Gopala Guru. So Gopala Guru was starting to become old himself. So he thought, so what about, we are talking here 35. He worshipped the deities for 10 years, from 1535 to 1545. When he started to become a little too old and he was afraid to leave the body, then he thought, I had to find someone who would replace me in the worship of Radhakant. At that time, Gopal Guru Goswami, he had installed other deities with Radhakanta. He installed a deity of Radharani, a deity of Lalita, and Nittai Gauranga also. At the time, Lord Chaitanya had disappeared. It was a few years that he had disappeared, but Lord Nityananda was still alive. Still, he had Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda deities side by side with Radhakanta and Radharani, Srimati Radharani, and Lalita. So during a dream, Lord Krishna came to him and said, tomorrow you'll have your successor, the one who will continue the worship of Radhakanta Diti. The first person you will meet tomorrow morning, he will be your disciple, you initiate him, and he will be the one who continue the worship of the Diti. So then he woke up, took his bath, went out of his house, and he found a very nice, brilliant boy just outside this door. Then he initiated with the name of Dhyanachandra. Dhyanachandra is another very important personality. He wrote many books, he had many disciples, he preached all over India, and he was a Dhyanachandra Goswami. There is one very important book on deity worship that was written by Dhyanachandra Goswami. Actually, I don't remember the name. It's a quite long name. His guru, Gopala Guru Goswami, has written one book of the same name, and Dhyanachandra Goswami wrote another book. So now we have this book, but this book is a result of the mixing of the two books. from Gopal Guru Goswami and Dhyanachandra Goswami. So today's book is the result of this merging of these two books. So when Gopal Guru Goswami left his body, and he said, my disciple Dhyanachandra will continue the worship. The king of Puri came to know that Gopal Guru Goswami has handed over the worship of the deity without telling him anything. He thought, I am the king. I gave you the deities, so that's my deity. And I should say who will continue the worship. So while Dhyanachandra and all Gopal Guru Goswami's disciples and thousands of people were going to the funeral pyre to give the last, salutations, the last respects to the Guru, the king came with his soldiers and he said to the guardians, from now on, Dhyanachandra cannot enter the temple. That's my temple, that's my deity. I will say who will continue. When the news came to Dhyanachandra Goswami, he didn't know what to do. That was his service, and service is sacred. Just like when you have a service in the temple, don't let anyone take it away. At least defend it a little bit. Don't think, oh, this is good. Oh, I have a service and this person wants to do, oh, this is very good, so I don't have to do my service. Should be the opposite. Should be, why you want to take away my service? That's my service. That's my relationship with Krishna. That's how I keep my relationship with Krishna. So Dhyanachandra Goswami felt the same way that his service to his guru, the service that he directly received from his guru, was taken away. So he took all the lotus feet of his guru Maharaj and prayed and cried. And he said, I don't know what to do. Please help me. And immediately Gopal Guru Goswami woke up. He came back. And he led a big kirtan procession back to Gambira. And he convinced the king that Dhyanachandra Goswami was the right person to continue the worship of the deities of Radha Radhakanta. And actually, to make sure that nothing would happen, Gopal Guru Goswami lived for a few years more, three generations of kings. Three Jagannath Puri kings came one in the other, and Gopala Guru Goswami stayed there just to make sure. And when the time came, Gopal Guru Goswami left the body and went back to Vrindavan. I'm not saying Vrindavan just out of casually, but there is a reason. The reason was that the year after, some devotee came from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri and said to Dhyanachandra, I saw your guru in Vrindavan. He's chanting. I saw him chanting his rounds under Vamshivat. And Dhyanachandra could not believe it. My guru has left his body. Cannot be in Vrindavan. And the devotees insisted, no, I saw him. He is in Vrindavan. So Dhyanachandra Goswami started a trip to Vrindavan by foot. Arrived in Vrindavan and saw his guru. And he said, Guru Maharaj, how is possible? You are dead. And Gopal Guru Goswami answered, you don't understand. You don't understand the transcendental nature of Sri Vrindavana Dham. The meaning of this is that the devotee do not die. Do not die. It just disappears from the mundane vision of people. But so-called life or so-called death for a pure devotee does not have any meaning. It's just the same. There is no death for a pure devotee. And Dhyanachandra Goswami said, we are missing you very much, Guru Maharaj, please. Come back in Jagannath Puri. And he said, no, I will not come back. But you go to Siddha Bakul, where Haridas Thakur was chanting, and there is one very old, dead tree there. Take the tree and make a ditty of me and put it in the Gambira, in front of, on the other side of the room, in front of Radha Radhakanta, and you worship this murti of me, so then you will never forget me. And this is how these great devotees pass their lives, chanting and worshipping the deities. And there's nothing boring about this. While sometimes some of us may chant automatically or worship the deities automatically, and when we chant, we just hear the holy name. Well, sometimes we don't even do that. We just chant and the sound goes away, do not enter our ears. Or when we worship the deities, we think, oh, today is my day, I have to worship the deities. But actually, this is how those people pass their lives. And while they're chanting, they were not just hearing a sound. While they chanted the Hare Krishna, you know, it was just a window opening, and they would see Radha Krishna, actually, physically present, transcendentally, present in front of their vision, their eyes, and they will see the Yamuna, although in a small room. Have you seen the room where Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sri Gaurakishore Das Babaji, or actually in this house that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had in Godrumadvip, there is one room where sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta or Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, because often they were together in the same house. You know, the father, his best friend, and is, can you imagine, we think about these big personalities like deities, you know, but they were friends, and they would meet. And there is one little room in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur house, which is maybe 1 meter and a half, per 1 meter and a half. It's just enough for a body to enter, sit down, and chant. There is no window, there is nothing. They will close, and that's it. And someone may say, what they were doing there, just chanting without looking to anything or hearing anything? That's because when they chanted, they had the whole universe opening up in front of them, and they would see Radha Krishna, and they would see their pastimes, and they would hear the gopis and gopas talking between themselves. There was a big transcendental fun. They would never get bored chanting or worshipping the deities. And so, anyway, this is the story I wanted to tell you about Gopal Guru Goswami and his dear disciple, Dhyanachandra Goswami, if there is any, and they worship on their deities, if there is any question. We have around 6 minutes. Yeah, no, yes. No. No. I mean, I was never able to enter. They would never allow me. Maybe they... You are luckier than me.
You're reading about how much benefit Putana got becoming Krishna's associate in the spiritual world, and it was saying that, you know, what she did, the little sort of in between pieces of devotion that were involved, you know, mixed in with trying to kill Krishna and everything else that she was doing, killing other kids as well. So she's a professional. And we wonder about some of us, we do all kinds of devotional service or like favorable and not really sure if we're going to be elevated to anywhere in the spiritual world with the speaker being one of Krishna's mothers or something like that. So how is it that somebody who was a demon got so much, and then sometimes devotees who also do all kinds of devotional service favorably don't seem to get as much benediction as she did?
Our philosophy is quite vast. Krishna is a person, and is also the most expert teacher you can imagine. So he takes opportunity or excuses for teaching different things in different situations. So there is not only one teaching or one principle. There are many, many principles. And so in the case of Putana, Krishna wanted to teach something. And in some other situation, like the Chotaridas case, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know the story of Chotaridas. Chotaridas did not become attracted to any woman. When he went to ask for some rice, he went to a great devotee called Madhavi Devi, I think her name was. She was the sister of Shikimaiti. Shikimaiti and Madhavi Devi are extremely advanced. At that time, Madhavi Devi was about 80 years old. So Chotaridas went to ask for some rice or something to cook for Krishna. And he was a sannyas. He wasn't supposed to talk to women. He just went to ask for some rice. So then someone would say, and then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him. And he committed suicide. So compare these two situations. Here we have a demon trying to kill Krishna. And Krishna freed her just because she did some kind of service to him. On the other side, we have Krishna in his form of Lord Chaitanya, rejecting a dear devotee for no apparent offense. So there is no comparison between the two stories, and there cannot be, it shouldn't be any comparison, because they're two different things. One, Krishna wanted to teach even a small service that could be appreciated. In the other story, he wanted to teach something completely different. Not that he didn't appreciate Chotaridas' devotional service, but something totally different. That the sannyas cannot associate with women. Doesn't matter what. Even for devotional service, you don't. Because if you do, then what happens is that everyone, the unsincere people, will take pretext and will say, look, Maharaj going around to women and who knows what he does, then I'm going to do it. And the whole system will degenerate completely. It will be mayhem. So there are two different teachings that Krishna wanted to offer to people, and they have no relationship with it. That's why it cannot be compared. And we have so many stories, and each story wants to tell something. The story of Gopal Guru Goswami wants to tell offers quite a few teachings, like attachment to service. Like like the power of pure devotees. So many teachings. We can talk for hours about this. So of course, a favorable devotional service is better. It's not that we had to offer to Krishna a favorable service. Still, Krishna wanted to tell us that in some special case, even if you have an unfavorable disposition to the Lord, it may appreciate that. Last question. Are you both Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Yeah, thank you again for another wonderful class. And my question has to do with the relationship with the spiritual master. And my question is that you gave this wonderful example of like the affection, natural affection that we might feel for a family member. We love our wife or our kids or something, you know, brother or sister. And then we want to do something for them just out of a feeling of love and service. And you applied that in our relationship with Krishna to have that relationship. Now, sometimes in the relationship with the spiritual master or with the devotees, they may be very heavy. For example, like in the relationship with my Guru Maharaj, he would work very, very hard. Very hard. Harder than any of us, even though we were younger than him. And I asked him about it once, and he said, I asked him, why do you work so hard like this? And he said, because that's what Srila Prabhupada expected from me. And he told me that sometimes devotees will come into his room, and he said, they'll be so relaxed. And he said, it's like we're in two different worlds. He was speaking about that, and he was referring to me, saying that, please don't be like that. Work hard. He said, when I look up from my desk, I see three things. He said, I see that two other of my godbrothers' houses and I. And he said, and then in my mind, I'm wondering what you guys are doing. He would think like that. So, but sometimes he would be very heavy, like chastising and yelling and demanding and criticizing, you see? And then, sometimes say I might come in contact with an old girlfriend or somebody from school or something, and they're saying, oh God, why are you waking up so early in the morning and working so hard in the movement? They're not paying you anything. And you feel like the emotion, the feelings for the guru may sometimes be, you don't feel that. You feel like, God, this guru is so heavy on me. You see? And my old girlfriend, she's so nice to me. And you feel like, I just want to, be with my old girlfriend. Why should I go here and just get, beat up by a guru? So, I wanted to bring that example up because, not in all cases, but in some cases, the spiritual master may be very heavy. So I was wondering what should be our consciousness, in that sense. I know Prabhupada was very heavy on my Guru Maharaj. He gave me many examples of that.
The spiritual master has the right to choose what to be and how to be, with who to be heavy, with whom to be gentle. There is no stereotype. It's not because our Guru Maharaj was so heavy, that means all gurus should be heavy, otherwise they are not spiritual masters. Every spiritual master has his own nature and his own plan, strategy, how to save his disciples. Sometimes a spiritual master may be heavy because he thinks that by being heavy, he can get more from the spiritual point of view, from his disciple, and sometimes he avoids this. It's not mechanic, it's not automatic, it's not that he will be heavy with everyone, or he may choose to be heavy with everyone. That's his prerogative. But it is not a rule that the guru must yell to everyone. So that's why we had to know the guru before taking initiation, because maybe we cannot take his nature. We just cannot take it. But we prefer to take initiation from somebody else. That's why in ISKCON we have, now we have 76 initiating spiritual masters in ISKCON now. And many of them are totally opposite of what you are telling me. Totally the opposite. I know Vaishnavas in our movement have been the emblem of humbleness and sweetness. You know, I'm serving six years with a devotee, who is a sannyasi and spiritual master in our movement, who is the sweetest person I ever met in my life. Not the sweetest devotee, the sweetest person that I met in my life does not match with any of the example you are giving me. That doesn't mean that one is wrong or this other one is right or vice versa. They are both right. That's their prerogative. They choose to be what they want to be. So this is the nice thing about bhakti and everything, that there is no stereotypes. Everyone chooses to be what they want to be. Srila Prabhupada was very heavy on some disciples and very sweet to others. He always talked to me extremely sweet, very sweetly. He never ordered me or anything. He always would tell me, can you do this? Would you do that? You know, the few times he spoke to me. He always offered me to answer to his question, what can I do for you? He was extremely sweet to me, because I was so shy that if he would yell to me, I would just kill myself, just disappear forever. But to other devotees, he would do that, because sometimes the chastisement from a spiritual master may give big push to spiritual life, because it destroys the ego. It destroys ego. If you're always sweet, then, you know, my spiritual master needs me, because he's always asking me, please, would you do that, you know? But if he would say, I don't need your service, if you want to do it, otherwise who cares? Then see how. You remember the case of the devotee who said to Srila Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. And Srila Prabhupada said, you are the most nothing. You are just insignificant. So you see how it works on your ego. That's a question of strategy. That's a question of planning, of what you want to do, how you want to do it. There is no stereotypes. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.